Welcome to Canthropod, the Cambridge Anthropology podcast. This is episode 29, The Political in Northern Irish Protestant Marching Bands by Sean French.
My name's Sean French, and in 2021 I did fieldwork of two Protestant marching bands in Derry in Northern Ireland. The marching bands in Northern Ireland, or the North of Ireland, are seen by many to be a controversial and highly political phenomena, more so in the past than in the present. Bands paraded Protestant identity in the streets, which often led to disturbances and violence as many saw, and still see them, as actively antagonistic towards the Catholic community. I heard about attempts to depoliticise the band scene in Derry, and so I went to Derry to find out more about it. To understand band life from the inside, I joined two bands and spent 14 months in Derry. The first step was learning the flute. In the first practice I went to, I was taken to the learner's room with two 10-year-old fellow beginners and given a flute to practice with. After learning the flute, I was eventually allowed to practice with the bigger band. One of the bands I spent time with were Blood and Thunder Band. Blood and Thunder is a genre within the marching band scene, characterised by particularly loud pounding drums.
Main differences would just be military styles, more just single beats, no, more like a military march, like no army, just a march. That's what their drumming's based off, where ours is a mixture between military drumming and pipe drumming. It's like combined the best of both, in my opinion anyway. There's more of a military's more like relaxed, proper drumming, but let loose. Like our style of drumming, every Blood and Thunder band style of drumming, you can just let loose. You can let, you be excited to play, especially whenever you see a crowd and the crowds are cheering on for you to play louder and whatever. Like you can, that's you want to be play as best as you can, but at the same time, you're in a Blood and Thunder band. You want to be loud. You want to be heard.
Wanting to be heard, as this band member put it, was talked about by a lot of Protestants I spent time with in Derry. Among many, there was a feeling that the Protestant community had had to make concessions to Catholics as part of the peace process, which they felt were unfair, and so now they felt like a marginalised minority in the city. I got a sense of this feeling of Protestant marginalisation one summer evening. I got the bus to a rural march. The bands had blocked up the road, and so I had to get off the bus and walk down to where it was happening. When I arrived at the tiny rural village, the bands were just finishing their march. I was surprised at how some people treated the marchers like rock stars. They winked and waved to the crowd, and the crowd responded with delight. The leader of a Protestant organisation passionately addressed them through a microphone, his speech intermingled by the moos of cows. He addressed the crowd as brethren and fellow Protestants and spoke of how, if they followed God's word, they would remain on top. He spoke of the importance of loyalty and then presented a series of jewels to members of his organisation, rewarding them for their long years of service. An ancient man was rolled toward him, curled up in a wheelchair, and presented with a jewel for 60 years of service to the Protestant organisation. This was met with rounds of applause from the crowd. The speaker, with intensity, reminded the crowd of how Protestants, now more than ever, needed the band together to preserve their culture. "Protestant culture is under attack," he said. They ended by singing the British national anthem. The phrase "wanting to be heard" slipped from one meaning as a literal description of being loud and heard on the street through a band, the pleasure in banging the drums, But it was, on the other hand, a metaphor for political representation in the city. The literal sounds of bands at times could become embodiments of Protestant representation. I asked the same band member about why he thought the Protestants didn't have a voice in the city.
That's come from years and years and years of people just saying, these are this, these are that. And the more they keep just not listening to what we have to say, the more they keep calling us thugs, loyalist thugs, bigots, sectarian, everything. How can you expect them people to speak out? How can you expect them people to want to speak out? You grew up in this town and you're a Protestant, you're nothing. You don't get to speak. Why should you speak? We're only 20% of the whole population in the city. Taking being in the band scene, you're even less. Mm-hmm. Why are you in a band? You're a bigot. You're this, you're that, you're talked down on, you don't have a voice. You try and speak. Doesn't matter what you say, bigot. Mm-hmm. You have a valid point in something, bigot. You're sectarian. You're this, you're that. Why? Why am I sectarian because I'm in a band? Mm-hmm. Why am I a bigot because I'm trying to say what I believe and what I think's right? No. We don't have a voice because when you just keep getting told you're less, why speak?
Some people feel that the marching band scene is offensive because many of their parades commemorate various historical battles in which Protestants defeated Catholics. But this band member feels that the term bigot is used to silence his legitimate voice. The political here is an ethnographic category under negotiation, and sound is heard in fundamentally different ways by different people, evoking different affects alongside it. To some extent, parading was about being heard in the city by people who felt that they were not heard in other ways, and many people saw it as a straightforward way of representing the working class Protestant community in the city.
It's all about showing support, you know what I mean? Yeah, well, personally, in that sense, it's all about showing Britain that we don't want to go away.
Similarly, an older member of a different band described how the band had functioned as a representation of the community since the 70s when it was founded.
You know, at that time, there was bands forming up. It was like a protest, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, basically at the start, we would have been some form of like a protest band, you know, a band in our own community, whatever it is, a rallying point for the people in the community. Mm-hmm. So we're a focal point, even right up the issues now, I suppose, around, you know, media and parading and stuff like that there, you know, always the main focus is the band, because the band's a colourful part of it, the sound part of it, you know, that kind of rebellious youth at that time.
These kinds of associations of the Blood and Thunder sound with the rebellious youth have continued to this day. The kinds of people assumed to be attracted to Blood and Thunder bands are rowdy young men with controversial political attitudes, not generally accepted in mainstream political spheres of post-conflict Northern Ireland. When I told people that I was going to spend time with a Blood and Thunder band, some were horrified. If they were against the bands, they were maybe suspicious I might become what they saw as a rowdy, offensive young man. Many people in the field openly laughed when I told them my plan, saying, "You're going to kick the Pope band." This was because I'm considered a member of the Irish Catholic community. In practice, the band are moderately welcoming. After a while, the leader jokingly called me Billy instead of Sean, a Protestant stand-in for my identifiably Catholic first name. I became interested in rowdiness as a political style and how it contrasted with other political styles. How do different styles of political engagement literally sound different to each other? What are the consequences of the acoustics of sound across musical instruments, the body, and the sound of the voice, both spoken and sung, for political processes? Political styles considered offensive and deemed inappropriate by many groups outside the loyalist community often sounded rowdier. The sounds were less organised, louder, and less harmonised. For example, the bonfires which happen every 11th of July and 11th of August are often associated with sectarian aggression as they burn Irish flags and sing loyalist songs. Not all bonfire goers behave this way, but it is a sight where certain sounds become paired with a certain style of political expression. The bonfire I went to was a towering inferno the size of a 5-story building, reaching up above the trees in a clearing behind a Protestant estate in the east of Derry. Throughout the weeks before, bonfire builders had assembled this, climbing to incredible heights without ropes, where falling meant death or at least serious injury. They had camped out in shifts to make sure Catholics did not ruin their night by sneaking over and burning the bonfire before the 11th of August when it was planned to be lit. On the night there were hundreds of people, a DJ over from Scotland who specialised in the loyalist Protestant sing-songs, identifiable by their cheery melodies, almost like children's music, but lyrics often referencing political violence and paramilitaries. The mostly young crowd fist-pumped and danced in the intense heat of the enormous fire and passionately screamed along. This is what it sounded like. So if bonfires were seen as the archetype of rowdy political styles, and this is what it sounded like, then on the other end of the spectrum, there were elements of working class Protestant marching band music, which were more like classical orchestral music. Some of these less rowdy bands had been engaging in cross-community peace-building projects, and had been invited to perform in more public spaces in Derry, with both Catholics and Protestants present. The sounds these bands made were less associated with political belligerence, and, as a result, they were more accepted in certain public spheres. When I went to one of the performances of these bands, they were seated indoors inside a large hall. I was told to carefully and quietly open the door so as not to disturb the bands, and told not to rustle the paper of the sandwich I was eating at the time. The judge of the band competition was not allowed to look at the bands, and so was concealed in a special booth. This was so the only factor influencing his verdict was the pure sound and precision of the bands. This was a very different sonic environment to the bonfire. There were certain implicit sonic norms of behaviour in the public sphere of post-conflict Northern Ireland. This is what it sounded like. So sounds which were rowdier, less organised, and often louder were considered inappropriate in public spheres. This was true not just of music, but of sound more broadly, including voice. People were required to speak in calm, measured tones in political debate, as opposed to loudly and angrily proclaiming their opinion. The roots of these sonic associations of appropriateness are deep. The connotations of respectability of the quieter, organised, more classical marching band sound in part was formed under the influence of Victorian notions of martial self-discipline, which were promoted in the mid-1800s, intentionally through the promotion of marching band music in working-class communities within Britain. The same logic of promoting respectable subservience to authority through marching bands was later rolled out throughout the British colonies. However, this sonic style had to be learnt, and had strong middle-class associations with it. This meant that those people for whom rowdy sonic styles resonated more deeply, and who were less fluent in quiet, articulate sonic styles, were excluded from certain public spheres in Derry. One band member of the rowdier Blood and Thunder band told me how he felt alienated from the more respectable, classical sonic style, and how it just wasn't him. I met him and his friend at the bar of a Premier Inn on the outskirts of Derry for the interview.
It's kind of boring, like, you know what I mean? But to be fair, it's good to a certain degree where you're going, fuck me, you know, that boy. Or no, they're good, but It's not. It wouldn't be fun in my eyes.
He went on to describe how he didn't like the look of himself when he saw himself in the mirror playing the silver flute, and contrasted the aesthetic of the silver flute classical bands with how he was dressed at the time in a tracksuit.
See, I played the silver flute. There's no fun in the silver flute. I done the past lad, but there's no fun in the silver flute lad. Because, like, for my personal, right, like, no. Aye, it's alright looking at yourself, and they were playing a black mirror scene, and you look at yourself, lad, right, playing a fucking big, massive, long, silver thing, lad, right? No. I looked at myself and said, man, this is a me. Like, no, just the fact that it's a pure passion, man. Yeah. You know what I mean? Lad, and as you can fucking see, that is how I dress and go for a night of pints. Like, no. Uh-huh.
He can play the silver flute fine, but he feels alienated from it. The way he put it is a silver flute is a posh instrument. This touches on the class associations of certain sonic styles, which feeds into alienation from certain political styles. One of the consequences of this is that rowdy blood and thunder band music is often not even considered music proper. Music then is also an ethnographic category under negotiation. A band member who taught flute in local schools explained this to me.
Leg it out a lesson each week to come to me to do flute. So I'm trying to say, aye, but like, there's other people get out, you know, the piano will do it, the brass will do it, singers. So I'm trying to say, you're a musician now, you know, you've picked to do music, you need to up the game, like them other instruments. Because sometimes, I don't know, I get the feeling that they think with flute, they don't see flute as musicians, you know. You don't see the marching band thing as being a musician for young people, maybe. I don't know, maybe I could be wrong. But like, it could be them sort of band, them likes of the Blood and Thunder bands, you know, they don't see that as being a musician. No, they just see that as being in a band.
Some band members felt that because band music was often associated with sectarianism, they weren't considered real musicians. They contrasted this with Irish traditional music, played mainly by Catholics, who were considered real musicians, because there wasn't the same connotations to their music. Protestant community workers in the city were trying to change these perceptions.
We always use an analogy, especially, you know, when we're talking, you know, young nationalists going to school, who are fiddle players and boron players and stuff are classed as musicians. Young Protestants going to school who play flutes and drums are classed as thugs. You know, and that's a notion that we have allowed.
You know, I was just thinking, well, they can play an instrument in a marching band. You know, whereas some of them Irish traditional players, they're up and doing concerts and things. So it's trying to get that out there that, you know, we are the same as Irish traditional musicians and all, and it comes back to that perception. You know, and for me, the B flat flute that we play has still got that wee perception around it, because it's seen all them bands, not all the bands, but the bands that maybe are causing issue would be playing the B flat flute.
A local community worker elaborated on this association of Blood and Thunder music with political belligerence further.
Well, it still has the perception of being a working class activity. It's still got a perception of having connections to paramilitary activity, you know, so that's, young people will see it as cool. You know, if you're looking for street cred in your local community, that's where you go.
The attraction to paramilitaries was often compared to supporting a football team. Different areas were associated with different paramilitaries, and there was a similar rivalry between them. Sometimes the rivalry between these areas would lead to fighting in the local school, which sometimes was so fierce that they hospitalised one another. However, despite this, adults often looked on it as lacking real political depth. They would say, ah, they don't know what they're talking about, or, as mentioned, compare it to rivalry between football teams. The idea was that very few are actually members of paramilitaries, but there is a more widespread allegiance which plays out in the style of football teams. This sometimes blended with bands who became associated with particular paramilitaries, people saying, ah, they're more of a UVF band or a UDA band. However, many bands tried to avoid becoming branded with the mark of paramilitaries.
That's where they feel more comfortable with their own peers, people who are from a similar background, people who, you know, might have the same issues outside of the band, but in that band, no one's better than anyone else, or no one's more arrogant than anyone else. They feel relaxed and comfortable.
You know, they are what they are. You know, they're from this community. The being in bands is, you know, for some of them, as part of that community.
Part of the appeal for many members was the positive reactions of people in their community to seeing them marching, These intense positive reactions have come from the significance of bands as a representation of the local and wider Protestant community. But the affects of excitement felt while family and friends cheer a band member on are not always clearly linked to the political situation by the band member themselves. Sometimes they just like being cheered on or said they loved going out marching because it made the hair on the back of their neck stand up.
And then it was coming, I come here, you know what I mean? Like, no, you're kind of...
Yeah.
No, but that's all it was that there. And then, like, no, CC Mars on the other side, no, go on, yeah, boy. You know, I'm actually feeling good, like, you know.
I personally felt this intensity at times, too, despite not being from these communities in which bands formed. The first practice I went to, there were 20 or so people sat in a small room, all facing each other in a circle. The drummers battered tabletops instead of drums during practice, and we all played the flute staring at each other. It was a really intense experience, so loud I could barely hear my own flute playing, and I felt the pounding of the drums reverberate in my own chest. I got a sense of the affect the band members might feel when playing, and imagined how I must feel if this intense sensory experience resonated further with a deeply ingrained sense of Protestant and local identity, which I didn't have. On the other hand, sometimes these affects of excitement were clearly linked to the political situation in Derry. While many band members did not support paramilitaries or support political violence, they still felt the rush, the political tension, which accompanied parading. The sense of excitement was a draw in itself. Although it was a product of the political situation, some individuals enjoyed the excitement which they separated from any clear political view.
So it's a thrill. No, you're walking up to people who are hitting you, people are spitting on you, and people are calling you this, calling you that, there, and you can't react. Oh, it is a buzz. It is a thrill. Mm-hmm. It is a thrill seeing when you come down the crowd, lad, and then let's say Richie shouts a big tune, lad, and you're giving a big lecture, man.
Yeah.
It's fun, like, so it is, yeah.
Some other band members felt a sense of defiance while out marching. This was not fun in the same way, but it was still to an extent an enjoyable affect. The negative backlash from Catholics spurred them on and gave parading its intense significance.
It sounds crazy, but it actually makes you love it more.
Right, okay.
Because what I'm doing as part of a band, right, I've learnt an instrument, learnt discipline, I'm marching proudly. It's like, if you're trying to wind someone up, like trying to wind your mate up and you say something and he bites, well obviously you're going to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
The more annoyed they get, the more I feel, well, I just want to march. I just want to keep marching. Why should I stop? Why should I stop what I believe in whenever you're going to such great efforts to drive miles from your home to throw petrol bombs at me?
Mm-hmm.
It just makes me more defiant and going, like, you don't understand why I'm marching. You don't understand what goes into marching. You don't understand the practice that I have to put on to get to this stage. You don't understand how proud it makes you feel to march. You just have so much hatred that you need to throw petrol bombs, bricks, spit, cups of urine getting thrown over you, everything, like, just because why? Like, just because I'm marching down a street for 30 seconds and then I'm away. You don't see me again, like, takes me 30 seconds to get past you.
The sense of defiance was an energizing affect, and although, in a way, it was a negative feeling, it was also extremely exciting and gave marching its meaning. Therefore, having an enemy to defy was important, and I felt like band members had to balance this abstract enemy of Catholics or Fenians with real Catholics who they had personal relationships with in their everyday lives.
There is a few within the band that just don't like Catholics, but at the same time, if they got a job and they were working with the Catholics all the time, they would understand then that not all Catholics are Fenians.
Uh-huh.
If you know where I'm coming from, you know, there's Catholics, there's Roman Catholics, and then there's Fenians.
Mm-hmm.
And according to them, the Fenians is the IRA, just, you know, they're Fenians.
Mm-hmm.
They're not Catholic, they're Fenians. So there is, it's in any band, no matter what band.
In my time with the bands, people made many sectarian statements in band practice and very occasionally expressed support for paramilitaries. However, delving deeper, the picture became a lot more complicated. Band members during a band practice might say, fuck all Fenians, but then be very pleasant to me. I am technically a Catholic or a Fenian, in their words, from Belfast. Similarly, some of them had Catholic girlfriends or Catholic friends and workmates who they got on well with, but this didn't seem to stop them expressing anti-Catholic sentiment in certain situations. As opposed to trying to explain this as hypocritical or by looking for some imaginary, real inner self, a fantasy of the individual with fixed true internal states that can be discovered, it's better to treat people's contradictions and ambivalence as practices constantly in motion. It's better to trace the way certain speech acts come to take on certain meanings, and how words and sounds come to be configured in relation to meaning in shifting ways, treating it as a constantly reworked process. For example, one band member described the complex and surprising meanings political speech acts can have. He described how, for fun, he and other young Protestants often shout "up the Ra," as in "up the IRA." The IRA were the Irish Republican paramilitary dedicated to uniting the 32 counties of Ireland together, and they waged armed conflict against the British Army and Protestant paramilitaries. The Protestant band members identified as British, and many technically saw the IRA as the enemy. A member of their band had even been assassinated by the IRA in the 1990s. But this band member in his early 20s would shout "up the Ra" all the time just for fun. It evoked an exciting affect, and was funny in a way he couldn't quite explain. He says here he often shouts it when his friend falls over.
You see when there's a Protestant driver walking the street, like, "yeah, up the Ra." No, dude, it's like a national saying.
You would say it?
Oh, fucking right. "Yeah, up the Ra." No. you say it, no, all the time. Like, no. Let's say he fell on the street and everybody's laughing at him, like, "yeah, no, up the Ra." No, just no call for it, like, but, no.
So the ways people negotiated political identity and political expression were extremely complicated. I've sketched a few of the complexities here. Being in a marching band involved engaging in a particular sonic style which was subtly excluded from post-conflict peace-building public spheres in Derry. Class alienation and the ability to be represented in the city were mediated by acoustics and aesthetics with long histories. To be heard, they had to literally sound a particular way, but the sonic style needed to resonate in the city did not always resonate with them. The rowdier Blood and Thunder sound did successfully resonate with them, and its meaning was charged by the historical and political context of intercommunity violence in Northern Ireland. This was a way of making themselves heard through their own aesthetic. However, despite being excited by the history and images of violence, many band members were ambivalent when it came to community relations and found complicated ways of balancing contradictions in their attitudes. Banging the drum in a Blood and Thunder band, shouting "fuck Fenians," having Catholic girlfriends and close friends, and sometimes even shouting "up the Ra," all seem to be part of being in a Protestant marching band in modern day Derry.